All right, Josh, Demetrius here. Let's see, Demetrius Gelatus, for those who's this is their first podcast episode. This could be someone's first Cue It Up Network podcast experience. So I've got Demetrius Gelatus here with Josh Burble. How's it going, Josh?
It's great, Danny. Yep.
Very good. So I'm pretty excited. So Josh and I, this we're going to tell you what this episode is going to be about. Josh and I and two of our friends just went to Virginia and played a 10 ball event. And so we are going to give you results and coverage from that event, as well as our experiences in that event playing and some of the things that went well, some things that we learned, some things about the tournament that were kind of funny. It was a very exciting weekend, and we're just gonna basically what it is was that every time I get back from a tournament, so Josh and I, we didn't go together this time. It was a weird deal. I went with Jesse Engel. Josh, you went with Brian Brecky. We were there all in the same building, but we were kind of like that time we were just kind of the way it went down is I was already going with Jesse when you decided to go, so you invited Brian. So yeah.
Yeah, I was on the waiting list. I totally forgot I was even signed onto the waiting list. And the guy texted me a month or so ago. And I'm like, how did I get on the waiting list? What tournament are you talking about? And then I remembered the tournament finally and signed up. And then Brian got on the waiting list and the last minute got in. And so, yeah, so we were at different hotels and we weren't necessarily traveling together, but we were seeing each other in the tournament, sweating matches and hanging out. So, yeah, it had a very similar experience. It was very funny. So, I mean, as far as
Yeah.
like the tournament things that happened and everything. So it was cool.
So basically,
Yeah.
if we had gone to this tournament together, we would have had hours and hours and hours waiting in airports and waiting in lobbies and driving in cars that we could have already had like our own personal recap and talked about the tournament. But in this case, since I haven't really seen you since that two ball shot I missed anyway, so I haven't actually. Oh man. Okay, so anyway, I haven't actually seen you since I don't, you know what? I was so lost today, Josh. I actually Nate was asking me if I wanted to do a podcast and what day would work best, and I told him tonight. I messaged him back tonight. I said any day, Monday through Wednesday would work. And then I thought about it, I'm like, it is
Today's
Monday, and
Wednesday or Monday,
I'm
yeah.
like, I'm so this is how where I'm at. So anyway, I haven't seen you since a couple days. It was just 24 hours ago. It feels like a couple days ago. Anyway, okay, so enough preamble. The point is, we
Yeah.
are going to be doing a live. This is just me and Josh catching up on our experiences, and I thought it would just be better to do it in a podcast so that everybody else could ride shotgun to the I was going to use a different word, but the mess that was our tournament experience. So okay, with that said, first before we get into it though, I for new listeners or for old, I want to do a quick plug for my pool boot camps. So check out mnpoolbootcamp.com, like minnesotapoolbootcamp.com. I am a pool coach and I run 3-day pool boot camps. So I'm in Minnesota, but geography is never an issue because these are not just like these are serious expeditions. I'm looking for serious pool players. I think I had this recorded last time. I said it so well and then my computer died. I got lost. But anyway, I'm looking for people where pool is a purpose in their life. Meaning, if you ask yourself the question, if I never got any better at pool than I am right now, am I good with that? Like, am I just okay? Like, whatever. I'm good. I just hit balls and sometimes I win and it's fun when things go in. Like, if that's you, that's fine. But if you're the type of person where pool has played a meaningful role in your life, and you enjoyed it when you were getting better and having new high water marks and breaking through and doing things that you hadn't done in the past and achieving success to levels you hadn't seen before. Like if that journey is important to you, and to the point where you're not good if this is all you got out of your pool game. Like that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for people that say, "Hey man, I don't want to look back at 20 years and wonder if I could have done better, or I don't want to, maybe I haven't seen improvement in a few years and I'm not ready to say this is as good as I get." Or you're really, really, really hungry and you are getting better and you've got your eyes set on getting great and you want to make sure you learn how to play the game correctly. Like those are the types of people I'm looking for. If any of that sounds familiar, then I just say, you need to call me and get up. We can talk about it. I can tell you more about what I train on and how I do it. But it is not stuff that you'd see. It's not basics. It's not aiming systems. It's not what you'd see on YouTube for like playing two balls ahead or just, using tangent line here. It's like, no, I assume that most players that come and train with me are fairly serious, and we can talk about, what I do for players at different levels and what's a good fit and what's not a good fit. Sometimes I even take people that are not quite ready for my 3-day boot camp, and I can kind of coach them up to the point where they are. And I've done that with a number of my students where they didn't feel like they were sure that they were ready for a 3-day, but I had a few months of lead time before they came with me, because these are not like, hey, you call me up today and we get on the calendar tomorrow. I mean, we plan these trips out. And I have time to do some coaching ahead of time. Then they come up, have a 3-day experience where they can live in my house, train with me for 3 days on a pool table side by side. And then we have our own follow-up that we do to try to make sure that we cement these ideas and provide, you're part of the team after you come train with me. So that's what I want. I want people to know. Those are some of the thoughts that come to mind. Like, what do I want people to know about my training? And I'm really, really passionate about pool. And I believe this is not a game of some people have it, some people don't. This is a game of some people put in the work and learn it, and other people just don't. And I want to bring pool into your pool basement so that you can have fun too. Okay, that's what I've got to say about that. Thank you for your patience, Josh.
Oh yeah, no problem. And I want to add to it, Demi. It's like I can give my own testimonial. I mean, I played at a pretty high level when, since we've been playing together, even years and years and years ago. I'm not saying I'm gonna, whatever. I didn't mean to like to come off like that. All I meant to say is I played a pretty good clip, and I played at a pretty good clip when I wasn't traveling and working with you years and years and years ago. And even recently, I was playing at a good clip. And within the last couple, I would say 2 or 3 years, I just wasn't where I wanted to be. I wasn't where I wanted to be. I wasn't where I want to be. And I was watching you and watching your game, and I always had kind of heard what you said. So basically what I did was I said, enough about what I think. I'm just going to push in my chips and go through your systems and approach it the way you approach it and do the things that you're doing and, patterns and cue ball the way you are teaching and in the way that you some of the stuff you're doing. And it's changed the game for me, and now I get it. Now I understand it, and I'm playing better than I've ever played. And another thing that you're doing is you're helping people define the path and what's needed. And so you're an input, equals output guy. And so I've been putting in the input and seeing the output. And so it's pretty cool, man, because I kind of knew that, on my own as well, somewhat, but not so crystal clear and not so direct and not in such a powerful way. And so I just think that players at all levels, like you're saying, but even at that intermediate and advanced level, like if they're stuck like I was and they want to get better, like you're the guy that can kind of hold the torch and get them through those tunnels and get them through those dark spots and give them a crystal clear path and
Well,
answer a lot of those questions.
thank you, Josh. One thing that I do think matters is that, like, when people come and train with me, I don't just kind of look at it like, I'm going to show you a bunch of stuff I know, and then it's on you to try to like understand what I'm saying and figure out what you think is relevant, and then kind of squint and say, well, half of what you're saying is kind of like doesn't make any sense, and half of what you're saying is all fundamentals, and I kind of like the way I already do this, and I don't want to mess with that. And then it's on me to kind of cherry pick through a bunch of stuff that kind of sounds weird, and maybe I could pick out a couple ideas that I work into my game on my own. Like, that's how a training is with a lot of people. With me, of course, we've talked at length. I don't really super deep dive into fundamentals, and yet most people do find that they pick some things up from me. But I look at it the other way, which is I'm not going to just spew a bunch of stuff and hope that you pick a few things out you like. Like, I really put myself, like, I am that student. I look at pool the way they look at pool. I have the resources in terms of time and energy that they have. I am the age that they are. I have the opportunity. I have surrounded by the leagues or the players or the tournaments that they're surrounded by. Like, I am them. Now, with what I know about pool, but also with what I know about career management, with what I know about what it takes to get better in different areas and how much time or how much energy, like where is my best return on investment? What roads are possible? So I'm not just going to sit there and say, I'm going to throw a bunch of stuff out and hope you figure it out. Like, I'm like, no, if I was in your spot and I wanted to get to where I am, here's the road that connects. here's what that needs to look like physically. Here's what that needs to look like mentally. Here's what that needs to look like in terms of career planning or in terms of, you know, just like, and we can have that conversation, like you're saying, about like what is the budget of time and energy it'll take to hit different targets so that you're setting up realistic goals with a good plan that's actually going to pull the right levers to see real progress rapidly and actually make progress. And then what happens is once you start feeling the wind in your hair of making real progress in your game, my gosh, all of a sudden, you know, that resource of energy, it seems like there's more of it than there used to be, because it's amazing how putting in hard work gets more fun when you start breaking through and seeing cool things happen. So that's, I appreciate you bringing that up, because I work with mental game, you know, I work with all parts of it. So anyway, I just want people to know, like, I'm not just going to come here, give you know, a bunch of stuff and hope something works for you. Like, I roll up my sleeves, I hold your hand, we make a plan, and then we walk down that path for 3 days together, and then I give you ongoing support. And I mean, I'm just really in your corner. So
Yeah, it's really coaching as much as it's training too, in a lot of ways, and continued coaching through the Facebook group and things. Like Matt posted this weekend when we were gone, and you and I were at that tournament, and I saw the post, and I'm part of that group, and I'm like, hey man, this is exactly what I'm going through, and this is, you know, so I sent him a reply, and we chatted about it, and hopefully it helped. And you sent him a reply right away on the message, you know, thread, and I'm sure it helped him. And it's like, that's the kind of stuff that's pretty priceless, man, because he was in a tough spot and I think he got through it, you know? So it's cool.
And then it's funny because I actually needed the same advice that I gave him. Oh,
Nah.
so soon, so soon. Okay. All right. So enough about that, but I do hope that a few of you that have heard about this in the past take the time to reach out to me and call me. These trips take a little bit of planning. You know, these are not 1 week out. So, give me a call. Let's start talking about it. If it doesn't work this month or next month, let's talk about, you know, let's make a plan. I'd love to meet some of you guys that are serious about pool. Okay. Let's talk about this tournament we went to. We're going to start by talking about what the tournament was. We all went to the TTMD 10 Ball Open Championship. So the TTMD, this is Think Tech MD. It's a billiard streaming. And if I click, I don't really know. You know, the funny part is I'm kind of one of these guys where I don't know a ton. I just, you know, Jesse told me about the tournament, I came. But so TTMD billiard streaming went live on January 28th, 2020. So they've been streaming about a year and a half. And they now cover a lot of events, including the DMV Amateur Tour. They cover some local and national tournaments, the APA qualifiers. I'm just reading this off TTMDBilliardStreaming.com. So I really don't know a ton, except that Chris Wilburn is the guy that ran this tournament.
He was a like the on-site tournament director, and Wayne Everett's the TTMD operator, like a lead guy or owner, I think.
Gotcha. Okay. Very good. And then so they put together this tournament in Virginia, fun little 10 ball tournament, and we went down there. It was, oh, and I should also plug the location. So the location was, I want to make sure I say their pool room right. I want to say it was On Cue,
On Cue
right?
Billiards and
Yep.
Royal Front, I think it's called.
On Cue Sports Bar and Grill in Front Royal, Virginia.
Oh, Front Royal. There you go.
Yep, Royal Front Royal. Now, so we went down to this tournament. It was a Friday night players meeting, Saturday, Sunday. 64 players, big table 10 ball. The format was race to nine, winner
Well, was there
side.
a Calcutta, Demi?
Hang on. So I'm just so I'm just let me savor this. Okay, it was
I'm
race
sorry. I touchdown call. He stepped on your touchdown call.
to nine on the winner side, race to nine on the loser side, with the final 16 single elimination race to 13 from there. So then the interesting part was basically, you know, it's the same format. It's kind of like the US Open, where it doesn't really matter if you're on the winner side or the loser side, as long as you make the final 16, then you're in the final 16 and single elim down to the finals. The only thing is that they seeded the eight winners, the eight undefeated, versus the eight people that came through the B side, so that the eight winners did not play each other in round one. So that way, if you were, you know, the best, if you were undefeated, you were not going to play another undefeated player in the first round of the final 16. So there was a slight advantage on, in theory, you know, a slight advantage in terms of odds anyway, that you wouldn't be playing the toughest player left. But But nevertheless, making the final 16 got you paid. And then, yes, they ran a Calcutta, and the Calcutta was a weird one. It paid 8 spots. And the reason it was weird is because it was single elimination. The Calcutta paid first place, then it paid second place, and then it had to pay the same for third and fourth, and then the same for fifth through eighth, which is strange because that kind of spread the money out a little wide. And at the same time, it kind of meant that the third place money, you know, it's like you could have a guy that finished fifth get paid the same as a guy, or a guy that finished third get paid almost the same as a guy that finished eighth, because there wasn't as many different levels that, you know what I mean, as there normally were, and it paid fairly deep. So it was an interesting structure, but yeah, there was a Calcutta, and there's some funny stories to be had. So that was the format, and the we could talk. There's a bunch of stuff. How do we get into this? Should we talk about where things started getting a little, like where we first started getting alarmed is when we found out that
it's hard because I don't like, I want to try to balance this out where we honestly report what happened, because it was absolutely hilarious to kind of go through as a player, but also I want to say enough about how great the tournament was, the effort that they made, and you know, I just don't want to start bus driving because
okay, so for the audience to know, what Josh just said was a very friendly way of saying with all due respect. So Josh,
exactly.
So listen, no, Josh and I both had a great time. We will go back to this pool room. The owners were awesome. It was a beautiful place. We would definitely go to another TTMD event. I'm definitely a supporter. There was kind of two things that came together and created a perfect storm. And it has something that I wanted to kind of talk about anyway, in general. And this is something I've talked to you about before. So I'll just start here, which is sometimes tournament directors they don't really look far enough ahead as far as how many players, how many tables, how long is the races, how is this going to play out?
You got to do the math. I mean, that's it. Like, it's a math thing. That's it. It's a simple math thing that I just, it's shocking, but there was, to be fair, this is their first tournament they were hosting. Wayne's a streamer, and he made the announcement. He said, this is our first go at hosting a tournament and putting it together. And they've made a great effort to get the money added and to get sponsors, and he's doing big things. And that is really, really, really impressive and awesome. And he's a really great guy. And they had like a ton of referees and things. It's just, there's a lot, there's math though. The
yeah,
math
so,
is what's,
so I'm just, up. No, yeah, and I'm not, listen.
I know you're not going to, I just want to, yeah,
here's the deal is, in general, one of my pet peeves is that this is like, it happens all the time. And so, you know what, kind of like when I train pool, there are certain mistakes that people make. Like, I could sit there and list like 6 or 7 mistakes that is like, if you heard, like, these are the 7 mistakes that, like, half the mistakes people make in pool are one of these 6 things. And it's like, I see it again and again and again and again and again, because I teach it, I play it, I watch it. It's like watching a horror movie where people split up and go into the woods. That's how I feel. When I go to a pool tournament that's not exactly a matchroom event or a Turning Stone event, because Mike Zuglin runs that thing very militantly. But like, when you go to an event that's not exactly that, without fail, matches run late. People are waiting around the pool halls for endless hours. They're playing till ridiculous hours in the morning or in the night and in the morning, and then coming back in the morning, day after day. I mean, we've had this experience how many times, and every time we do it, see, and the thing that burns me is that tournament directors, like, we need turnout, but I have so many of my students, you know, are telling me things like, man, you know what, I can only go to a 1-day tournament, and a lot of times these things run till 3 in the morning, and I just can't do that. I don't have it in me. I don't have the energy. It's not worth it to me. Like, I've had so many people, like, it's killing our turnout and it's killing the experience. And I've had experiences, as you know, where I've played till 4 in the morning, 2 days in a row. And then the third night I'm there 1 in the morning playing in some finals. And it's like, I just spent 3 days to get to the finals, and now I'm completely, like, you know, falling asleep in my chair, and I got to play
zombie
I'm zombie bat bit. I got to try to double dip some champion playing a 1 pocket set at 1 in the morning. And it's like that. It's like horrible. It's a horrible place to be. And it's like, I want to play the finals at 8 PM when I'm rested and have an audience. You know what I mean? That's what I want. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So what happened was, they wanted to run a 64 man double elimination tournament in 2 days. Now, right there, without even knowing anything else, I was like, yeah, That's ambitious. Like a 64-man tournament in 2 days on a race to nine both sides with a redraw. Grant, it seemed very ambitious. And so right away, like the mistakes that tournament directors make is they drastically underestimate how long these matches take. Like, for sure. Because what happens is you have a wide field where you've got some players that are like 800 plus Fargo and champion players, and then you've got a bunch of amateurs in the tournament too. And what happens is a lot of these amateurs, it's their first tournament. And those matches, you know, they're not like break and run. Like, there's a lot of play in a race to nine. And then on the loser side, you got five rounds. You got the winner side match, and then half of those people lose. So then they have to win. There's four rounds on the B side to get down to the final 16. And there's just a lot of rounds of pool to play. And a lot of those rounds, race to 9-10 ball, I mean, those matches are going to take, you know, yeah, a lot of them are going to be an hour, 20 minutes, but some of them are going to be 2.5 hours or 2 hours. And that's just going to happen. And so you got to know that. And so it's almost like you said, do the math, how is this going to work? So that was the one challenge. And then the other challenge that compounded the issue was not Chris's fault, was he originally was going to run this tournament at On Cue Sports Bar and also another pool hall nearby that had a bunch of tables. But apparently that other pool hall had Brunswick's, and this was a Diamond sponsored tournament. And so Diamond did not want him to do that. And so he was forced to play just out of this one pool room, and it had eight tables. So we have eight Diamond tables that are 9 foot and 64 players, which means just to get through the first round required four rounds of 16 player match, you know, 16 players playing each other. And so that means if each round takes 2-2.5 hours, it's going to take us 8 to 10 hours just to get through that first round.
I know. And we're starting. Yeah, we're starting.
And it's a 2-day tournament. Yeah. And it's like, yeah. We're all sitting there looking at this. Like, it was like when you saw the iceberg and you think about how slow the Titanic turns and you're like, we're going to hit that thing, sir. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, I think we're going to hit the iceberg, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was absolutely a horrifying feeling on Friday night. So anyway, I don't want to bust. I mean, hindsight's 2020. I think that there was a lot of things that could have been done. And in the heat of the battle, I mean, it was his first tournament that he was running like this. And this was a heck of a curveball to get thrown about being limited on tables. But the results. So in the end, what I would say is I wish for the future that tournament directors would be very, very conservative with their timelines and like assume that things are going to take longer than they do and assume that, you know, just you know, you've run tournaments, Josh, and I've even told you that, and I've had you like back down set lengths and loser side set lengths. And like, mm-hmm. I mean, cause you've always got the purist that like, let's do race to 17, you know, and all this, but then it's like, in the end, I love long sets. Right. But I would rather play races to seven with tournaments that run on time, start at, you know, 11 in the morning and end at 11 at night and run cleanly with posted times. And you have time to eat once in a while, like, you know, when you get hungry like that. To me, I'd rather do that cleanly than have races to nine where it turns into a complete disaster. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And it's hard, man. It's hard. Cause it was like Olathe is a tournament that's been running for 20 years or 30 years. A long time. And that was a shit show down there for us. We were up till 3 or 4 in the morning and back at 8 AM and for multiple days in a row. And it was just absolutely a grind and a slog. And so that's a long running tournament where they just, it's maybe they know better and they just determine that's the way we're going to do it. But if it's your first tournament, I could see how it could happen, man. Because it's not like we got there and these matches were taking 3 hours and this was oh my gosh, this person slowed up the whole bracket or something. It's like these matches were going at a pretty good clip. There was just too many matches, not enough tables, and too short of a time. So it just, the math didn't work. And I was surprised they made adjustments along the way. I think they were talking about dropping a 7 on the loser side right away, and they stuck with 9.
One of the problems about that. Yeah. Cause I'm sorry, you were going to say they went from, it's the final 16 was supposed to be a race to 13 and they shortened
they switched it to an 11. Yeah.
They switched, except for the actual finals.
The finals was a 13, but like Brian, for instance, Brian was there and he lost his second match and he basically had to sit there because the posted times were out the window at that point. They started with posted times and then they backed him off an hour or so. And then they just erased everything and just said, we're just running them when we get them, because they were just in kind of in scramble mode. So Brian ended up having to sit in the bar, and they're like, this is wham, wham, wham. I get it. It didn't happen to me, thankfully, but he had to like fight to find a chair because there wasn't much seating. Had to sit there for almost 4 hours. And then he played two matches until got back to the hotel at 4 a.m. and didn't get back there at 9:30. And so it was just like,
And you said that last part fast. He was there playing until 4 a.m. And then he had to come back the next morning at 9 a.m. to play to get the money. And so,
yeah.
Now, and the other thing that we didn't mention is that the tournament director, Chris, to be fair, I mean, he saw this was going to be problems and he made adjustments. The first round, so the tournament started Saturday morning. First round, he started it at 8 a.m. because that was like he knew
he had to get going. Yeah.
And so we started. So I was there. I've never in my life been to a tournament with an 8 a.m. match. And so to go in there and then be told that the first match is at 8. Of course, I was at the quarter of the bracket that me and Jesse both played at 8 a.m. So we started at 8 a.m. and that tournament ran through 4 a.m. And then Brian had to, in order to get into the final 16, after getting back to the hotel at 4:30, had to be back ready to play at 9 a.m. And, you know, how would you like to come back after 4 hours sleep and play Tyler Steyer to get, you know, in your money? It's like, it's tough action, man.
Happened. He had to go play Tyler Steyer.
No, I know. And by the way, I forgot. On the winner's side, Josh, I just wanted to ask because I was trying to remember, who did Tyler lose to on the winner's side before the redraw? I know what happened after the redraw, but what happened before the redraw?
That's a good question.
I couldn't remember how he lost because he was playing pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll
cover that. He played Alex. He might have played Alex.
That might be right. Okay. So let's talk about – okay, so anyway, and now as far as Chris – if you're listening, I understand this is your first. So the difference is I'm not mad at you because this is your first tournament and you made lemonade out of lemons, my friend. And I appreciate that. I would just say the difference is there are some people that have been doing this for years and years and years and still keep doing it. So now next time I would just hope that we could do it to where next time we're starting at 10 or 11 in the morning and ending at, you know, by midnight, we should be wrapping up play.
And it just look at it in reality and say, hey, these matches, they're not an hour and a half. They're probably closer to two. And so if you just say, all right, let's just average an hour 45 or 2 hours. Let's just go on the high side.
Or
say
two and a half. Yeah.
Because I think 2 hours for a race to 9 on 10 ball with a mix of amateur and pros, you're going to have some blowouts, but then you're going to have some amateurs as their first kind of pro-am event. Like you said, it's going to slow down. Anyways, just say it's 2 hours. I think that's optimistic on average, but still good. It's better than an hour and a half. Like you just have to look at how much time and then is if that means you have to and you can sit and just schedule it out like you scheduled matches and say, okay, now if we get behind a half hour here, an hour there on a table, that's fine. But we can't. If you looked at the math dummy, that thing probably should have started Friday at noon or something you weren't playing at 4 a.m. and you were having all your matches get in.
The only reason I'm screaming about the 2 hour thing is that you're just taking it as like a truth of tournaments that things run behind. And you're like talking like, well, at least now when they run behind, it won't be as bad. It won't be 4 hours. It won't be 4 a.m. I'm like, why don't we just set it up to where they don't run behind?
And if you could do that. Yeah. Then they might have to. Yeah.
You could just say, we're going to do 2.5 hours a match. We're going to do 10:30 a.m. We're going to do 1 p.m. We're going to do 3:30 p.m. We're going to have a dinner break for an hour. And then we're going to do 6 p.m. And then we're going to do 8:30. And then we're going to do a 1 at 11. And that is what it is.
And then if it works out that you can only have a 32-player tournament, then you have to adjust your match lengths or your races or something. I mean, you just have to change. Something has to change because you have to work out for reality.
Here's the things you can toggle is the number of players you allow. You have the number of tables that you're working with. You have the length of the set. And then so it's like those are the variables, right? And then the last variable is how late you can have people playing or how early you can have them back and how many hours they sit around the bar waiting. And what I would say is that by not owning those other three variables, you end up sitting people at the bar until 4 a.m. and then scrambling to come back at 8 and try to finish. I mean, it's like, You end up, it's like something's going to give because you can't, you know, this is not time travel here. We do not have a flux capacitor. So therefore, what you can't do, you can't change the number of tables you've got. And you can't, so the only three things that you can adjust are the length of the set, the number of, what was the length of the set, number of players you allow, and then the player experience. And too many tournament directors are so excited to just get many, many, many players and long, long sets. But then they just, when stuff blows up, the players suffer. And I would just say it would be really nice if they saw that and said, our players are not shock absorbers. I need to run this realistically. And so I have to look at how many players do I want to get? How many tables do I have? And then what lengths of sets can I do to make sure I have a great, customer experience, a great player experience. That's all. So Chris, I'm sure he's hearing this and he's going to learn about this. And I'm like, listen, he knocked the ball out of the park and I had a great time. So I'm not really mad at Chris in any way. He's kind of a hero. I'm mad because I've been through this so many times. I just wish that this was like, I'm kind of like doing a public service announcement for anybody that wants to run tournaments or has feedback for tournament directors in the future. That's what I'd say. Okay.
Yeah. And can I just add one?
Yeah. Yeah. Thing, go ahead.
I've promoted tournaments and ran tournaments locally around here. And so I kind of understand a little bit about it. And so when I watched Wayne and saw his announcement and heard what he's doing and saw what they did, I really want to stand up and applaud Wayne and Chris and say, man, they had, this is one of the first pro-am type tournaments that I've been in at Putnam where they had, I mean, they had people volunteering. They had refs, like they had multiple refs. Like, I don't know. They might have had 4 to 6 refs there,
yes,
just kind of floating around and switching around and grinding it out and working. And it was like, I'd never seen that before. They had people that were volunteering and working at the front to try to, the two gals are working up there. They had people that were volunteering and working in the Calcutta. I mean, they had a community of people that were volunteering and helping out to make this a very special and professional event. They had a dress code.
He used the word, we're professionals. This is a professional event. He held himself to the same standard as Matchroom in terms of the, I just wanted to say that was the refrain that kept, he was like, I am running this. This is going to be a professional tournament, a professional experience. And so, other than the scheduling fiasco, which was half wasn't his fault with the tables, other than that, I mean, it was an awesome experience.
Yeah, so I see where they put their energy and their resources, and I see how hard they work to pull it off and to make all that stuff. So like, I think, just to be fair to us, we're not just sitting there saying wham wham wham, it didn't go that we want this and that, and I just say this is ridiculous. We're not saying that. We're saying, hey, this is a player experience review from the tournament and kind of seeing what happened and saying, okay, here's some feedback, but also saying, I understand as a promoter and like as a person that's running an event, how hard it is to get the sponsors he got, to get the people to volunteer, to get that thing to go off. And I just think there was a detail of, and it was probably just inexperience a little bit, is not really understanding. You got to sit down and do the math on how long it's going to take to pull this thing off with all the variables we said, and that's it. So like, don't change a thing, keep doing what you're doing. It's awesome. It's great. I would say the only thing I would say for changing is look at the tournament and the things we talked about and just kind of think about it and see how they feel about that feedback and try to get that little part of it, which is a huge player experience part, but it's a part that they kind of missed in the planning,
And the heck of it is that we're going to get into the Calcutta next, I think, because what I wanted to say is one of the things that makes it tough to make adjustments is that once you have a Calcutta, if you make adjustments in the tournament format, it's really questionable. So for example, I want to rattle off some of the players that were there. So I'm sure people are wondering like who showed up. So I will say in terms of like known ability. Okay. We had James Aranis. We had Alex Pagulayan. We had Jesus Atencio, who's playing extremely well. We had Warren Kiamko. We had Jeremy Sosi. Tyler Steyer. We had, Rodney Morris,
Earl Strickland,
Hunter Lombardo, Brandon Schuff. I know I'm forgetting some guys that are, we had me, you, Jesse Engel, Brian Brecky, Joey Korziak.
Yep.
He's there's plenty of players that were, 680 to 730. And I just can't list them all or remember them all, but like, it was a tough field. Okay. And so you had some elite players and you had some, some guys like Earl and Rodney that used to be kind of like elite players and they still play very well. And then you had a bunch of guys like us that we're all fighting to get in, along with a host of, regional and local players that all, can play pretty well, right? So that was kind of the field. And so what happened is I'm going to cut. I don't want to sit here and try to work around the slow roll. So I'm just going to tell people results here in a second, but I'll tell people that Jesse and I decided we bought half of ourselves each in a Calcutta. And then I was really big. Anyway, long story short, we bought James Aradas in the Calcutta and he won the tournament. So, and he didn't want half of himself. So it was just one of those things where, it's this funny story because I wanted to buy the wild card of this Calcutta. So I'm going to give you guys all some, man, this is going to cost me money, but I'm going to tell you.
No, you can't. Okay. I was going to yank the cord on you. So you can't say this. Go ahead. Tell them.
No, no. You know what? They can come to my boot camps and ask me about
it. Yes.
Okay. So I just say that anyway, I have some theories about the Calcuttas. Anyway, in this case, I bought James Aradas.
Your theory led you to James Aradas.
My theory led me to Penny. I came out of pocket $2,600 and bought James Aradas. And he didn't want half. I mean, Roy was there and, with the Roy's basement, he is his handler, whatever. He didn't want, half of them of James. And so I'm sitting there with $2,600 and James. Of course, Jesse's got half of it. Me and him are splitting or whatever. And so that's a big sweat. That's a big sweat. And what happened is James ended up winning the tournament. And that was tremendous. I mean, the first place in the Calcutta was $7,000. So we won like $4,400 off that. We jelly rolled up $300, So, I mean, by the way, anybody listening, jelly roll your horse, man. You got to jelly roll your horse. So, for those that don't know, if you buy someone in the Calcutta, they win you a lot of money. Give them a tip. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay. But the funny part is that it didn't have to go that way because, we could sit here. Not only could we sit here and speculate all the ways that things could not work out that way. What happened was in the final 16, we're going to talk about our journeys a little bit separately, but like the final 16, all of the, I don't remember. I think Warren made the final 16.
He did. But, yeah. Warren played Alex in the final 16.
Okay. Right away. So that's a bad. So Alex made the final 16. I mean, all the top players we named Alex, James, Jesus Atencio,
Tyler
Steyer, and then Jeremy Sosi, me, Brandon Schuff, Hunter Lombardo, Jesse Engel. The players that didn't make the top 16 were Earl and Rodney. Rodney made it. I'm sorry, Earl. And then unfortunately, we could talk about what happened to you and Brian, but you and Brian did not make this final 16. But it's a weird format we're going to talk about. But the point is that in the final 16, like, it ended up being James Aradas first, Alex Pagulayan took second. And then in third, fourth place, Jeremy Solsi and Jesus Atencio took third, fourth. And then in fifth through eighth place, I was in there, Jesse Engel. And then I actually don't remember the other two players that went out in fifth through eighth. I don't remember. So the point is that in Tyler Steyer, unfortunately, he made the money. He made the final 16, but here's what happened. And so now I'll tell the first funny story of the tournament, because this is the most unbelievable thing that's probably happened to me in a pool tournament for a while. I mean, this is my first live tournament in a year and a half. I was pretty excited. So now we got $2,600 on James Aradas, and he plays Tyler Steyer first round in the final single elimination. And this is what I'm saying about the tournament director making adjustments. When we bought James Aradas, the single elimination was raised to 13. And when it gets shortened to race to 11, obviously it's not a huge difference, right? But the shorter the race, the more vulnerable the wild card is to elimination, right? And so when you have a Calcutta where people are spending thousands of dollars of their own money out of pocket to bet on something with a certain structure, it's kind of like, I don't know, man. It's very, 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 very risky to start changing the structure after that. It's kind of like it's literally changing the rules in the middle of a game when people are betting thousands of their own money on it. And it really shouldn't be done. Now, I'm not blaming him for doing it. I'm not even saying he was wrong to do it. Sometimes you have to do things that shouldn't be done. I'm just saying it really shouldn't be done in you know what I mean, in theory. But as it is, the races were shortened to 11. And how big of a difference could that make? Well, James had Tyler 10-8 going to 11, single limb. Tyler comes back, makes some really good shots, breaks and runs a rack, plays really good, and gets it back to Hill Hill. And at Hill Hill, now I'm sitting there sweating this. And I'm, man, this was tough because I was playing, Jesse was playing. So I'm kind of watching Jesse play in the corner of my eye. And then meanwhile, you know, Tyler and James are playing, and I've got thousands of dollars on this rack of pool. And I'm just like, and I'm trying to play on my game, but I've got like all this stuff swinging around. It's very emotional. And so Tyler breaks, and he's got a shot of the one on the ones on the side rail. He's got to cut it down the side rail and send his cue ball two rails back to the opposite side rail and then back to the first side rail. Like basically, he wants his cue ball to end up right where the one ball is now, so that he has a shot on the two up the side rail of the other corner. And he hit it so good. Like he had to hit a really good speed shot to like shoot the stun shot from a long way away and send the cue ball straight back and forth, two rails. He hit it so good that the cue ball rolled back to where the started and it froze on the side rail. Like he had to be near the rail and it's like he got it froze, where it was like just a little bit of that awkward bridge where you're bridged along the rail and it's frozen and you're half elevated back cutting the two. Like the two ball was like a ball and a half width off the long rail. And, you know, instead of getting flat on it and full on it where you can bridge comfortably, he got that like half elevated slight back cut where you've got to hold the ball. You know what I mean? And it was just Hill Hill. And it's like, I'm serious, man. Okay. So here's the deal. I'm rooting for James for financial reasons, but I'm a huge Tyler Steyer fan, and Tyler's playing good and breaking good. I mean, he just took the best player in the tournament, the guy that won the tournament, and he was the only guy to take him to the hill and had a shot to eliminate him. And I'm telling you, man, he came so close that if that ball doesn't freeze on the rail, I thought he was out. But he froze on the rail and ended up hanging the two ball. So now my horse is at the table. He's got like six balls to run, and he has to start with the jump shot. Tyler hooked him on the two. He jumps in the two ball, makes the three, and there are four balls left on the table, the four, seven, eight, 10. He makes the three to get on the four on the side. And James Hill Hill goes two rails, and the cue ball's rolling. It's going to hook him beyond the seven, or it's going to hit the seven. If he hits the seven, he's got a shot. If he rolls behind it, he's hooked. What's going to happen? The cue ball's rolling softly towards the seven. It's rolling. Is it going to bump it? It rolls by and rocks behind the seven. And I'm not going to sit here and do salt shakers and all this for the audience, but like, I'll tell you what, let's just suffice to say he definitely was completely hooked beyond that seven ball on the Hill Hill. And there was no jump. He was like almost frozen to it, right? He was like almost frozen to like the side of it. He didn't have a good kick because the side pocket took away the one railer. He didn't really have a good end rail kick. I mean, it was really the way the balls were sitting. Like, I'm not saying he can't hit that ball. I mean, he's got Filipino blood. I figure he could maybe get a hit there. But like, I think for most players would give up ball in hand there at least half the time. And even if you hit it, there's only four balls on the table and things are not laying to where the things are sitting on rails where it's hard to get behind anything. His prospects at that point were grim. And so what he decided to do was a soft masse. Like when I say a soft masse, he curved, like he elevated like a full elevation masse shot, and he had to get the cue ball to curve very soon, which means you can't hit it hard because it'll slide too far. He needed to shoot it so it curved around the seven ball. He was almost immediately hooked behind. So he had to elevate very high and then shoot a soft masse so it jutted out like 4 inches and then curved almost immediately, which means it was trickling across the table at the four ball softly, trying to pocket the four directly into the side, like shooting it straight in, which means that he's going to curve at it and roll the cue ball softly. And so if he does not make this ball, I mean, there is no like luck factor. There's no hook you're gonna get. I mean, you might not even get a rail. You know what I mean? It's just like he bet. I mean, he's 10-10. He's hooked single limb, and he hits this curve shot, and the cue ball curved around and cut the four in the pocket. And now Jesse and I, of course, were biased because this was a big deal for us. But like, we think that might be one of the best Hill Hill escapes we've seen. What do you think? Did you see that shot?
I didn't. Brian told me about it, and he just said that was just the most amazing thing he's ever seen. The series of shots that he pulled off and things like that. Yeah, so
I mean, we were
he just
drawn
was
so
like,
dead.
it's
It
crazy.
was like, I mean,
Yeah.
Jesse and I were talking about it. Like, it's not as good as Effort Z kick. Like, we still rate the Z kick as a better, you know, the Effort's 95 Sands
Yep.
Regency, Hill Hill, whatever. But like, it was one of the most amazing Hill Hill shots I've ever seen, especially after putting yourself there. And then James is just cool as a cucumber, and he just hits the shot. So anyway, it's on YouTube. I'll see if I can find a link to this shot, and I'll link it to the episode so people can see this run out.
Yeah, that's got to be posted on the
I'll
streaming
see if I
show.
can find it. Yeah. So, okay. So James gets by Tyler 11-10. And I felt really bad because that meant that Tyler was eliminated in 9th through 16th. He like min cashed the tournament and did not get the Calcutta. And I really felt for him. Like he was, you know, I mean, that was a hard loss. And yep. I mean, I understand. I mean, it's tough, man. Trust me, I understand.
Yeah. Brian played him and got knocked out. And he said he ran about 4 or 5 out of the 11 racks, or no, out of the 9 racks. And that he was breaking and playing awesome, and said he thinks he can win the tournament.
Yeah, Tyler's break and runout percentage is like nearly the same as like the top, like Shane, Filler, Fedor are all like 40 to 45%. And I think when Tyler played Jesus Atencio, I mean, I think he was like, he might've been like 39, 40%. I mean, he was like, I think he was 40%. And it's like, you know that he doesn't run out the balls as well as Filler and Shane and Fedor. So, I mean, no offense, Tyler. I mean, love you, but you're not Fedor yet. Okay. But the point is that if you're running out 40% for the break, I mean, you're 90% of Fedor. That's what you are. You know what I mean? So anyway, yeah. Okay. So yeah. So it was very disappointing to see Tyler lose, but of course I was happy my horse advanced, because then after that, I mean, Aranis just caught a gear and just plowed through everybody he played. And it wasn't even close. The final score was like 13-6 with him and Alex. He was down 4-2. And then he won like literally 12 out of, he won, no, he was down 12, 4-2. He won 10 out of 11 games to go up like 12-5. Yeah. So, I mean, it was, he just ran away with it. And it was just running out, breaking like God. Yeah.
Smash the break, shape on the one, run out. Yep.
So in the end, we ended up like just crushing Jesse. And I mean, that was a big deal. We won a bunch of money, and that was very funny to see. Like, we were almost seriously stuck, and we were like doing the Roger Larson. there's a guy up here in town, guys, that we used to play that, you know, he would do he was old school, right? He was like from the 80s. And so he'd do the thing where when you're getting ready to shoot the money ball, he'd reach into his pocket and start pulling out money. Like he's going to pay you off, like, but he's not conceding the game, but he's getting his money ready. It's like the old shark move, you know? And anyway, that's kind of like, I was like Roger Larson again. When he was hooked on that ball, I started pulling out my money, even though of course I'd already paid the 20s. Okay. Enough about that. But that was my Calcutta story. And it was a very, very, very,
very emotional weekend for you.
it was intense, man. It was intense. I was sitting in the hotel room screaming at the screen, and it's pretty funny. So
yeah.
Good stuff. Okay, so let's talk about results individually. You and Brian kind of got hosed on the draw, man. That's it. You guys got really hosed on the draw. Happens. Because it does. I'm just talking about what it is. It's like when you play a tournament, there's a lot of luck in the draw. Because let's talk about Brian's draw real quick. I don't want to dwell on Brian and Jesse because they're not here to defend themselves. But Brian won his first match, played Aranis in round 2, which is like obviously as tough as it gets, and did not win. And he actually had, I know he played.
He got a 4-0.
He was playing good. He got up on Aranis, and Brian was, listen, Brian's a solid player. He's taken down Shane and champions. He's made the finals of other events that are very similar to this. So it's like, he's a hell of a player. And he had, I mean, so it's not like he just doesn't have what it takes to beat Aranis. It's just that Aranis played well and got some rolls. And what happens, what's frustrating is that when you're like, you know, Brian Brackey or me or you, it's like, first you have to play a really, really, really good set to have a chance to win. And then that's not always enough, because then you got to get opportunities and things have to roll right too. And it's like, it's one of those things where Brian actually showed up and turned in a really great set that was like an Aranis beating swing. And it just didn't happen to beat him that set. And, you know, it sucks.
Yeah.
And then, unless you happen with the Calcutta. Okay. Yeah. But then on the B side, Brian sticks around, plays till 4:30 in the morning or whatever to win down to where he needs one more match. And then when he comes back, he has to play Tyler to get in, and Tyler runs out half his racks in the break. Yeah. And just, I mean, it's like, so that's really, 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 really tough action, because I don't know that anybody could beat Atencio. And if anybody almost beat Atencio, it was Tyler. He's the
no,
guy
not Atencio.
Aranis. Yeah. So it's like almost nobody could beat Aranis. And then the other guy he had to play to get in was the guy that almost beat Aranis. And it's like, gosh, man. I mean, it's just like, but anyway, but the thing is, it's not our first tournament. We're just telling people listening, like, this happens. The draw, you could just get gong showed sometimes and boom, you're just nothing really you can do. It's like, that's poker. And then Jesse, I'll talk about Jesse real quick. Why don't you talk about your tournament? Because you had a kind of a similar
Mine is super quick and easy, simple. Yeah. I drew a local player and beat him 9-0, and he was nervous, and I played solid. And so my first round, and then I get my second round, and I watched the kid next to me playing a little bit and the kid was just dabbing it. He's just young guy, jump shots, powerful stroke, mullet, kind of swagger, you know, kid. He was my second round, and I saw him play to get to the second round. And I thought, oh man, this is gonna be a super tough match. And I ended up just shutting him down, and I beat him 9-4. And yeah, it was a good round. I mean, both rounds, I wasn't like, I was just grinding, and I was playing solid. And then, so then Brecky and I were in the same kind of bracket. So Brecky loses to Aranis. So then I have to play Aranis, and I just, results, I lost 9-2. And I can tell you my experience with that set if we want to talk about that, but that's what happened. And then I have one more, I have one more roll at getting into the 16. So I had kind of a 2-for-1, and I go and look, and it's Soucy, and I'm like, oh man, that's tough, man. He's really playing good, and he's got a new baby, and he's hulked out, and he's playing, you know, he's got to win. And
well, he just made the final 16 of the world championship, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Anybody that doesn't know, Jeremy Soucy is one of the best players in the U.S. right now.
Yeah.
He's playing extremely solid. Yeah.
Yeah. I looked at it, and I'm like top 20 player in the U.S. right now, probably.
A lot of people think he's top five, should be on the Moscone Cup. So, I mean,
yeah, exactly. I don't mean to sell him short, bro. I mean, and I don't want to oversell him either, because I don't know him that well. But yeah, I mean, I've heard, that's what I told whoever I told. I'm like Irene or something. I said, you know, they're talking about him on the Moscone Cup, and this guy's an awesome player. And that didn't, and again, I lost to him like 9-5, I think. And it's like, it wasn't like I was sharked or nervous, or, I mean, I could talk about both matches if you want me to, but I'm just giving the guy credit. And I'm also trying to like bad beat story myself and say, that's just kind of a tough beat, man. It's like, I'd rather be playing Soucy, you know, get me into the final eight of the tournament. And I feel like it's a better match for me. But in that spot, it was a tough draw. That's all.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. It's like, when you look at the players, there were 16 people that made the final 16. That's how 16, the number 16 works. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of players weaker that just played each other and advanced, and they didn't have to play, because most of the top players were undefeated. So basically, you had to have two top players run into each other so that one of them lost. And then you had to draw one of the few guys that had drawn another top guy and lost. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's like, it was like for you guys to play Aranis both. And then, which, I mean, that's pretty tough. And then on the B side, for it to be a Tyler Steyer and a Jeremy Soucy, like to get in, when everybody else, I'm looking around, I mean, I'm not,
it's a little light of anyone else. Yeah.
It's pretty tough. It was a pretty tough draw. And that's all I was saying. So yeah, we'll come back.
I appreciate you mentioning that. I mean, yeah, you know, you still got to try to win sets and things, but. You know, I just, whatever, we could talk about it. I'm open to talking about it, as I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll zoom in, but then Jesse, I'll just cover Jesse real quick. He drew his first round. He won his first match. I can't remember. He might have, if he played Joey Korsiak or somebody else. Anyway, he won his first match, and then the second match he drew Earl. They put him on the stream table, and Earl had him down 4-1, and he came back and won against Earl like 9-5, 9-6 or something. I mean, he played, or maybe 9-7, I don't remember, but he came back and won. And so that was cool, because, you know, he's my friend, and I was rooting for him. And then he played Brandon Schuff to get into the final 16 and lost to Brandon Schuff. And then on the B side, he played a player that I don't know, and I don't want to sell him short, but he wasn't a top player, but he was a good player. But Jesse beat him to get to the final 16. Then in the final 16, Jesse played Rodney Morris and first round. And now these are races to 11. And it was very amazing to watch, because I didn't get to watch it because I was playing. But like, this is right at the same time as Aradas was hill-hill with Tyler Steyer. Jesse was hill-hill with Rodney Morris. And I will tell you this, he played a great set. On the he was down 10-9 to Rodney Morris, and he ended up dogging the nine ball and left Rodney kind of tricky, and Rodney ended up missing it back. And then he won that to go 10-10, and then he ran out of the hill and beat Rodney 11-10. So it was, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, Jesse dogged it. I'm just saying, like, It was just one of those things where at the same time as Aranis was hooked, I saw Jesse missing an eyeball. Roddy was on the hill, and I thought my two horses were out. And then, nope, they both made
Then
it
they
through.
weren't.
And then
Yeah.
they weren't back. You know, got the get out of jail free card, like a cat.
Yep.
They've got 9 lives. And so then Jesse made the final eight, and then he played Jesus Atencio, which a funny story about Jesus. Did you hear know about this?
Yeah, I was listening to it because I was sitting there and I heard it. Tick, tick, tick. It was just unbelievable.
So we were watching Jesus playing, and he was, and we heard this tink as he's playing, and it's like sounds like every time he shoots the cue ball, it sounds like you're hitting a, you know, it's like sounds
Aluminum
like you're,
baseball bat or something.
yeah, it
Yeah.
sounds like a Delta rack is being
A
used or
Delta
something,
rack. There you go.
Delta
That's much
13.
better. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we looked at him like, is that a BK Rush? It looks like he's playing with a BK Rush. We're like, does he play with a BK Rush? Like, does he play with a break cue? Like, I mean, that's weird, you know. Like I don't know, Earl plays with like a snooker cue and you know earmuffs. I mean, I don't know. Like maybe the guy's got a reason for playing with a break cue. Well, I found out like much later that apparently his tip somehow like his other normal something happened to his tip on his normal cue, and so he just shrugged and played the rest of the tournament with his break cue, and he played really like
Really good.
he should just stick with his break cue, man.
Yeah,
He
I was
plays so
watching
good.
Jesse's match with him, and he plays awesome, man. He's just a man. He's a powerhouse, man.
That
With a
guy
break
is.
cue, he just played. And Jesse came over to me after the match, and he goes, "The only thing more devastating is that he beat me 10-5 with a break cue, or something, or whatever, 11-5 with a break cue."
It's pretty
And the
funny,
score
man.
was
So
so
anyway, so
yeah.
Jesse ended up in fifth through eighth, and Jesus, I mean, okay, let's come back to me then. And so then I won my first match against a good, he was a good player, but you know, it was just the way it went. I got playing. I did what I needed to do to kind of keep it. I won 9-3. And then my second match, I played a good player and I didn't know how good he was. He actually, like I looked him up later. I guess he's like right around 700 Fargo. I think he was 693, but like, you know what I mean? Roughly 700. And he played really good on me. And he, you know, and I made a couple mistakes and everything, but that's because I make mistakes and, you know, that's part of my game. And so, but he was tough, man. And he ran a lot of tables and he rose to the occasion again and again and again and kept making it good comebacks. I think I had him 6-3 and I think he tied it up and he just kept fighting back. And then it went all the way down to Hill Hill. And man, I ended up, it was one of my highlights of my tournament was I fired in this really difficult two ball shot and then ran the table and beat him 11-10. It was just one of those matches where I'm not like, well, I was playing so good that match, but it was a tough one to win in the moment. And it was a, you know, looking back, it's like, I was easy to be like, oh yeah, I did this and that, but it's like I didn't have to win that match, and I felt good to get through that one. So then I was down to the final. I needed one more match. I played Hunter Lombardo to get into the money, and that was a 8 a.m. batch again, the next on Sunday. So, tough action. And Hunter's a tough guy to play at 8 in the morning because he's just like a suffocate, real steady kind of player. And I was probably a little snake bit because last time I played him, he played re you were there when he like steamrolled me out of turning. So
Yeah, Turning
he
Stone,
beat me
yeah.
like 9-1. He played like perfect on me, and I think I was still like that can affect you a little bit, you know. And I made a it was just I was a little patchy at the beginning of the set, and then I tried to come back and just he you know what though, he kept breaking and running out and doing one thing. He kept doing his job. And he, you know, he didn't play perfect, and I had a chance to close the deficit, but I leaked away too many things too early to really. I did what I could, but it just wasn't enough. I lost 9-7, and then to get into the money, I had to play. Oh gosh, this is funny. I had to play Matt Craw, who is like a Northeast champion. You know, like you know, he's just shy of 700 Fargo, but he's real seasoned, right? He's been playing pro tournaments for many years on the Northeast coast. Anyway, it's a funny story because I played Matt Craw once in Rhode Island, and I played like a really good set of the guy. I beat him like 8-1 or 9-1 or something, and it was like I just played one of my best sets. It's like this was like 10 years ago, and then I played him to get the money yesterday, and without a doubt, Matt, if you're listening, man, I'm not gonna be like that was absolutely the best set of pool I've ever put together in my life, and it happened to be against you yesterday. So I'm sorry, man. It's just one of those things. It's you know, you'll get me. You know, Hunter got me at Turning Stone. I get to get you there. So anyway, I ended up winning 9-0, and I played like I think I technically missed a ball because I played a two-way shot on this one ball that didn't go in. But other than that, like it was like, I mean, you know what it means to run a table. So then just do that times nine, and it was pretty fun. So it was cool, man. That was my highlight, maybe. For, well, I liked the Hill run, and then that was a fun set. So yeah, then,
sweet.
So then I was in the final 16, and I played Joey Korsiak, and that was a super dogfight. I mean, he was struggling, I was struggling. We both had good patches, but all I know is that it was real patchy. He wasn't happy with his play. I wasn't happy with my play, but I was up 9-8. And the only good thing I'll say is I was up 9-8 going to 11. And then I got to the table with a really difficult situation, and I got through those balls to go 10-8. And then I broke and ran out to go 11-8. So in the end, I got it done when the finish line came.
Closed it out. Nice. Yeah.
Which was two times I did close it out, which is important for me to remember, because then what happened next hurt a little bit. I played Jeremy Solsi in the final eight, and I'll tell you, man, he's really tough. I was just hot and cold, man. It's like I would play good for a few racks, and then I just, you know, miss a ball, or and I just made a couple blunders, and it was not, you can't do that, man, if you want to beat guys like Jeremy Solsi. And so, but somehow still he made a couple mistakes back, and I got it. I mean, I don't know how. I was at 6-6. And I, Josh, it was so funny. I felt like I was down like 10-3, and yet the score was 6-6. But like in terms of how I didn't feel like I was playing my best. And I just, he looked like he was playing really good, and I didn't feel good. And then he, his next three breaks, he broke and ran out. He was breaking really, really well, and getting good opportunities and running out like a boss. And so I ended up falling behind 10-7. And then at 10-7, he hung a 7-ball. Or no, an 8-ball. I think it was at the one where I kicked in the 8. I don't remember. All I know is he hung a 7-ball, and I got out to go like 10-8. And then I think like somehow, or maybe that was the one where I ended up kicking in that 8-ball and, you know, got out. So somehow I got to 10-9, then I broke and ran out to go hill. And all of a sudden it's like, I mean, at 10-7, he was running out. I looked over, and all of a sudden it's hill.
Oh, was it, what was the one where he missed the 8-ball? Was it 10-8?
No, that was 10-7 when he missed. I remember very
clearly. It was 10-7 when he missed the 8-ball?
Yeah, okay. He hung it up, and I had to
kick
it.
Because then he had another rack where he had a chance to get out, and when it was, I think, 10-8, and it was a similar – it was – the 8-ball was kind of straight in, kind of-ish, long. He just kind of got a little flat on the 7 and left himself a long 8, and it was definitely the right play to just take it and shoot it, and it was a long shot, and he kind of hung it, and then, but he missed a couple cuts down the rail, and late in the set, Brian goes, oh, he missed one of these earlier, and he missed it again when it was like 10-8, so
yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm just kind of giving you my experience from watching it. It was like, there was some, he played so good, he's just an awesome player, but it's just, it can happen, man. I think where you miss a certain type of shot, and it just seems like it comes up again to try to close it out, you know? And
well,
it's like,
and I mean, listen, yeah. I've got the on YouTube, if I wanted to relive this, which I won't, but, I remember vividly, as I recall, the 10-7 hung an 8-ball, and I kicked it in. I almost missed the kick. When I kicked it in, I accidentally put like an eighth of a tip of left spin on it. I didn't mean to, but I didn't cue it absolutely center. So as soon as I kicked it, I felt this little bit of a turn of spin. I'm like, oh, but it held up and it barely chipped the ball in. And then, I got out to go 10-8. And then at 10-8 was the one, Josh, where, there was the 6-7 were tied up on that side rail, and I had to scrape the 4, and I Mickey Bellston me on that 6-7. And then he kicked it, hit the 4, and left me hung up in the jaws of the corner. And I elevated and speared the 4 on the side and pounded my cue ball 2 diamonds over across the line of position to bank the 6 cross side. And then I snapped the 6 cross side, had to roll in the 7 and accept a long shot down the rail on the 8. I fired the 8 in and got out to go 10-9. And then yep. I broke and made a really – I ran out of the hill. And the one I ran out of the hill to get to the hill was the one where it was the 4-ball that he missed, because I had to roll the 4 in from off the side rail, long cut the 5 from distance with a soft speed and go like into the 6. And then I had to cut the 6 down the side rail past the side pocket. And I got straight on that 7-ball where I had to like play the 8 short side again down there. You know what I mean? I got straight on the 6 and I had to play the 7 down the long rail past the side pocket again. Mm-hmm. So I had to make the 6 and the 7 or like the whatever 2 balls, the 6. No, it was like the whatever it was, the 6-ball and the 8-ball. I had to shoot down the rail past the side pocket. And anyway, I ended up running that. So I was like, he might have missed a 4-ball, but
yeah, that's how I was thinking. I mean, there's one more ball that he kind of
he missed
like,
the 4-ball
down
he missed
a rail.
He missed a 4-ball. Yep, that's the one. Because he left me frozen on that rail, and I had to make. I mean, I just remember it's like I don't want like I played three good racks to get to the hill because that run out I was just describing, like it's on YouTube. Like
Yeah.
it's really, really tough.
I wasn't trying to say he let you win or I wasn't
No,
or
I'm just
like dogged it or anything. I was just trying to
No,
remember
well,
the set a little
he
bit.
did
Yeah.
dog it, but they weren't just sitting in front of the holes. I mean, it was like
Yeah.
a
I mean, he
series of
missed a couple shots, big deal. I mean, that happens, but he also played awesome. And then you also played awesome. So it was just an awesome match yeah,
And
it was cool.
then it goes hill, and he was feeling a little shaky based on what had happened, and I got a shot, and I missed the two ball. That's it. He left me dead perfect on the one to get good on the two. It was, you know, there was work to do in the rack, but it was not one of those. It was a rack that I looked. I mean, Josh, I felt like I was running out. Like I felt like this is the part where I win. I was in my gear. I was playing really good. Like.
Watching it felt like all the momentum was on your side at like once he missed the eight ball demi when it was 10-7, I thought I've seen you play for years and I've been on the road with you for 10 or 15 years. I thought this is when demi wins from 10-7. That's what I
Yeah.
thought. I thought this is where demi steals this,
I've
doesn't
seen this
steal this
show
set, but just
before.
I've
Yeah.
seen this movie before and the momentum's
I tell you,
on.
I do the
Yeah.
Color of Money where I like pull the car around outside facing the wrong way and I run out of the wow.
Yeah,
Yeah. Yeah. This
exactly.
is the part
I
where.
really felt like it. And so then on the hill, I think, did he miss the one ball or something
Well,
after the break or?
well, and then he tried this. He kind of tried the wrong shot. He tried a James Arraes curve shot in the one and sold dead out. And
Yeah.
I really felt like I wasn't like celebrating. I was nervous, of course, but I was like nervous where I'm like, I get the win now. And I made
Yep.
the one and
Yeah.
got on the two and I was figured out where I wanted to be and I felt good. And it was just, there was just, it's just pool's tough. And I hung the two ball, man. It rattled and
Yeah.
he calmly ran the balls out and he ran a really good rack.
A
And
super tough rack from there. I mean, it
yeah. And
was,
just,
you
I
know.
mean, he did his job, man. And
Yeah.
in the end, it really stings because it's like, if I win that rack, then I'm in the final four, and then I'm playing Alex. And man, race to 11, he's playing good. But if I started, I mean, I was breaking good. Like that's the, you know, I
Yeah.
was breaking better than I've ever broke at a 10-ball tournament before, thanks to all these virtual competitions and all the break work. And so I
Yes.
really
Yeah.
felt like Alex was not breaking well. And yeah, I'm an underdog, but I mean, if I could get past Soucy from down 10-7, then I'm
Yes.
totally freereeling, and I'm like, ha hoo ha,
Yeah.
and I can
That's the
just see if I
sequel
can.
of the movie is that after you beat Soucy, I would have figured that you had a really, really good set against Alex.
Yeah,
So,
like
yeah.
I had a like a non-zero chance. If I win that rack, I might be like 1-3 to beat Alex and get to the finals. And how
Yeah.
cool! And then it's like that would just be like a lot of fun. But anyway, instead of doing that, I decided not to shoot the two in the pocket, and he ran out, and it stung, you know. But then what made it a lot more livable was two things. One was I got to still root for James from there, and obviously that was a big, big win for me. But number two was, listen, Tyler Steyer missed the two ball on a hill against Arraes to get eliminated and not beat Arraes. You know what I mean? And then, so it's like, and then you look at like Arraes hooking himself, and you look at, I'm trying to think of other times that on the hill. I mean, Jeremy Soucy even letting me back in the match. It's like, you know what
Yeah.
I mean?
Yep.
It's like
Yep.
everybody makes mistakes and everybody has, you know, everybody dogs it, everybody chokes, everybody makes mistakes. And it's like, it's just, I mean, I was far from the only person that missed a ball. You know what I mean? So,
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, we've talked about this with your students too, and it's like, yeah, like Soucy did not have to run out after you missed a two ball. And if he would have missed any of those shots and left you a three or four ball bopping him up out, I mean, it's a whole different story, right? And it's a whole different, but you were kind of talking about it. Doesn't it change the experience of the two ball, but it does contort everything, man. Results contort everything. So.
What I said specifically, so the guy at our forum, not forum, our Facebook training for MN Pool Bootcamp, he was asking like, how do you shake off a loss like that or a miss like that? And I told him the example, like, suppose Jeremy Soucy had run down to the eight ball and hung up the eight and I tapped in three balls for the win. Well, then I went on and let's just say I beat Alex. Well, forget about that. Let's just stop it right there. Let's say that was the finals and I ended up winning the tournament. Well, if I would be proud of my performance, like, hey, I won the tournament, I won all my matches, whatever. It's like I performed the exact same for 2 days up to the point at which he ran the table as if he had, if I had the same performance exactly all the way down to missing that two ball and he runs the table. Well, then I'm a loser. But if he runs the table up to the eight and I end up winning, then I'm a winner. It's like, well, wait a second. I had the identical performance. The only difference is, does Jeremy run the balls out or not? And so it's like you can sit there and say, well, in one case you're a winner, in one case you're a loser, but like You played identically. Why would you be critical of one performance and celebratory of another performance based on whether or not some other guy happens to get across the finish line? I mean, I understand we're in America. We think about wins and losses and all this, but like I have kind of gotten away from that as much as I can. And I just look at like, I did my best. Sometimes I win 11-10. Sometimes I don't. I'm not like, oh, shucks, it doesn't matter when I'm playing. Like, trust me, I'm life and death trying to fight with everything I've got. But in review, after it happens, I just look at it like that was, you know, my performance was okay. And I didn't play great against Jeremy. And I played good to make that comeback, and I was playing good at the end. But like overall, I didn't play bad, but I didn't play perfect. And that's just how I play. It has swings, and it was as good as I could do. And I know what I need to work on, and we're going to get to that next. So, but I gave my all, and that's what happened. So that's next, you know, next most important word in pool is next.
Yeah.
So, okay. So we recapped who was playing, what the results were, Calcutta, our results in terms of outcomes. What were your takeaways? Like, what was your, where do you want to go from here? I mean, is there anything you wanted to tell me about your matches, or you were talking about like your experience playing Aranis and Soucy? Like, you know, I mean, there's already things you could say, right? You could either say, oh, you know what? I haven't felt that kind of pressure for a while. I dogged it. Or you could say, you know, I played my game and it wasn't where it needed to be. And, it didn't hold or it didn't go my way. I mean,
I have a lot of stuff, and I don't need to go through it all. I'll try to hit it as fast as I can just for the sake of time and everything. So I was nervous in the first two rounds and was very grindy and vultury and just ball for ball and gave up very little and played pretty good. And, you know, the competition wasn't Aranis and Soucy, of course, but by the time I got to playing Aranis, I was like in this weird spot where I wasn't nervous anymore. And I was too loose. I just made too many mistakes at critical points and he plays awesome. So 800 is a complete different ball game for how their production level. So I get it. I understand that. But I played him and I just was like, not nervous. But then the shots I missed, I didn't give enough attention to. I just was like too loose. Right. Yeah. So then I kind of just, it gets out of control because he's an 800. He's just going to run a bunch of racks and do a bunch of things. And So I lose 9-2. And I won a couple games at the end of the set just to kind of, I was just like, it's kind of unreachable when I'm down 7-0 or whatever it was, but I won a couple games, just fought, made some moves and some kicks. And
just for some dignity.
Some dignity. Kind of scratched together some dignity. I was like, I was sitting there at 7-0 and I had a push and I'm like, why don't I just try to outmove him a game and just to try to, you know, like,
make a move on Chad. You're going to make a move on Chad.
I'm just going to make a move on Chad just this one game, right? And so I actually, it's just a funny story because I'm so beat. I'm so down. I feel so out because it's like, it just, my any sort of chance evaporated of beating him. And so that's what it felt like. And I had a situation with a one ball. I broke, I think maybe. And, or he broke and left it where I had to push and the one wasn't like near the pocket. So I made some weird push where I had a chance to get it back and to do something. And he gave it back to me and I kicked it off the rail and hit it like a one pocket shot and hooked him. And so then I got ball in hand, I think. And then I ran out and then I did something the next game. I think I broke and ran or something. So it's like, I won two games and I just got a little dignity back, and even though I lost the set,
you know, you know what'd be really funny? I've never seen happen. What if you ran two racks on him, got the 7-2, and then you just unscrewed and said, "Good match." Like I know I can't win. I'm not trying to win. I just wanted to do those two. You could have it now.
You could have it. Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, I'm joking, but it's funny, man. I can relate to what you're saying about, you know, being a little loose. It's. And I'm not saying this would happen to you. There's a couple ways that could happen. One is you just get so dialed in and comfortable that it's just easy to get too loose. You know, it's a hard mix to get right, man. And then sometimes for me, being too loose is almost like a form of pressure where it's like, I feel like the only way, like, in other words, there's so much pressure, it's so overwhelming that the only way I can handle it is to let go a little bit and just kind of like, well, I'll just hit balls because, you know, I've had that happen to me, and that's not what happened to you. I'm just telling you, I've had that happen to me too. So I've had it happen where there's not enough pressure because I just don't feel quite tight enough. And then I've also had it where I'm so overwhelmed with pressure that I have to loosen up. And then it's hard. It's one thing if you loosen up because you settle in. It's another thing if you loosen up because you're not like, you know what I mean? It's hard to control. It's not like you can control all that. It's just kind of like pool, you know? And it can change shot to shot and set to rack to rack.
It can change rack to rack and set to set. It's just so crazy, man. So that's, yeah, I was too loose and it was no good. And he's a great player. It doesn't matter. I could deliver the best that I could possibly deliver and it could still be not enough and whatever. That's fine. So then I'm like, okay, I don't, that's fine. I got another rattle at it. And then I saw it was Solsi and I'm like, oh, it's a tough one. And so I got there and I think I won the first couple of games on Solsi. And then it was kind of like closer match towards the middle of the set. And I was playing okay, decent. I mean, it was probably like close to tied around four or so in 5-6 range. My memory's not as good as yours, I'm sorry, but like it was definitely in reach and I had opportunities to keep it close. And I made a couple errors where I was just a little loose, where I came up on a rack that was open to keep it really, really close. And I just fell short and of my position. So then I had a cut, like, you know how I can make cuts and stuff, tell me, like pretty decent, those
Yeah.
sort of like half tough cut shots into the corner. Like I had one of those shots and I thought, well, this is a shot I always make. And I'm going to aim it a little bit and just kind of feel it in and just kind of be loose. And, you know, it's like, if I'm playing and I usually make these shots and run out from here, even if it's tough. And it didn't go in. I missed it. And so it's like, and then he wins, and then, you know, he's breaking like a truck and playing great. And all of a
Thought he was
sudden,
breaking good, wasn't he?
yeah, instead of 6-5, all of a sudden it's 8-4 or something the next time I shoot, I think, you know,
Or
and
seven
it's
or
just,
7-4 instead of 8-5 or something. Or then he runs another rag. Yeah,
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 no,
yeah.
he ran another one. He ran another one. Yeah.
Oh
So it's
yeah.
like, whatever it is. So it's like, I miss a ball that, you know, it's like, so it's just, it was a critical point of the set. And I just fumbled and missed a shot and hung it. And he got that one and then broke around another one and stuff. So it's fine. So the whole thing's fine. It's just looking at it was just a little bit tournament. So those guys are both super, super tough. And the only, you know, maybe on Aranis, it's really hard to take a set off him. Obviously it's hard to get to the hill, like you were saying with, and that whatever, but, not that he wins every single time he plays, but it's a tough, tough, tough player. But it's Solsi's tough too. But it's like I need to be in a position where I can try to scratch those games in the middle and make it a fight. And I just can't be fumbling like that. And so that's fine. So my takeaway. So that's my like review. And then my takeaway is, you know, I put a ton of work in the last year and a half. I put in a lot of volume, and I was hitting them really, really good at certain points. Like you and I have played together, and I think you've seen that I'm hitting
You
them good.
well, even when we were warming up, like the night before on Friday night, when we were just hitting balls at that table, like, I mean, you're striking the balls really well. And it's like, this is not, you know, this is not coming from a guy who's never left my pool room, you know, in a small town and just, you know, oh, you're the big stick. It's like, no, I'm talking about like, I just sat in a room watching some of the best players in the world striking balls all week. And I'm like, you are striking the balls extremely well. And it was really, the only thing that it would be cooler than watching you get the draw that I got, and not to say anything bad about the players I played, but they weren't, you know, Solsi and Aranis, at least not, you know, I mean, of course I played Solsi later, like you said, in the final eight, but like I know that what would have happened if you'd gotten just a little bit more opportunity. And the only reason that that doesn't bother me is because two things. One, I know you're going to get more opportunities because you're signed up for a bunch more tournaments. And number two, I'm actually, as much as I wish that you'd won that whole tournament, I'm even more proud of your mental game and how far you've come in terms of just being a complete brick shit house with your mental game, to where you could just understand that that's what happened, is that this was a tough draw and a missed shot and a little bit of, getting back to live tournaments and a little bit, it's like three things. It's like you could say, okay, where can I make a few tweaks to my mental game? Where can I make a few tweaks to my physical game? And then how much of this is just me needing to swing the bat a few more times? And you can look at it very scientifically and say, mentally, I can do one or two things to just kind of make sure I'm ready for those situations. Physically, there's a couple things I want to work on. But overall, I also know that if I didn't change anything and just swing the bat, I'm going to get good results with the way I'm playing. And if I do all three of those things, tweak here, mental, tweak here, physical, and swing the bat, then I don't have to be like devastated that I didn't win this tournament, because I already know I'm going to win something. And it's just a matter of, is it Texas Open next weekend, or is it the one in Des Moines in 3 months? Or, you know what I mean? It's like, whatever.
And so, well, thanks, Dom. I appreciate that. And I feel like, we talk about all the time, and it's not a cliche, and I talk about with this Brecky all the time, but like, I learned so much by losing this last couple days. I just learned. It's like, I just learned a lot. I learned a lot. I need to ask more of myself in my preparation. I need to just prepare a little bit more. And I might, this is, I didn't talk to you about this. I'm thinking about like slowing my pace down just a touch, man. I just need to just, I just, I don't know that with the amount of, there's only a few players in the world that can play as fast as I want to play and kind of as loose. And those guys are kind of super elite, and they're playing all the time. And so I'm only going to be able to put in so much work per week with my family and my life and my thing, and travel and play tournaments, maybe one a month, big tournament if I'm lucky. And there's not a lot of action around here, so I'm not gambling in between. So I have to look at what my actual like experiences, what my resources are, and how much I can put into it. And I have to look at it honestly, Demi, and say, I think I need to get a little bit slower, because I don't think I can play the style that I want to play with the input and the setup that I have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I, my first thing is, so tell the audience here, we have a little joke where you're fire, I'm ice, because we play opposite styles in some ways. Because you're like fast, explosive, kind of like Earl in the heyday, or like Kim Davenport, or these, just kind of like real, I mean, Roddy Morris, these guys kind of like, strike me as your kin. And I've always played more like the Ralph Souquet, Nick Varner, Alex Pagulayan. And so anyway, there's times when we've had a lot of experience in history comparing styles. And in the end, what's funny is I had an experience where I'm kind of thinking the opposite, which is I need to play, more pace, more free stroking, looser, quicker. But we're talking about like micro tweaks, because
I
we're
was talking
both
about, yeah, small, small,
because
small
we're I'm
tweaks.
good with my style and you're good with your style, and we need to play the way we play. But the question is not how do I change styles? The question is, what benefits of the other style can I maybe kind of stir into my game without really changing my style and my overall approach and plan and experience? Are there any benefits I could get from, like, how could I, could I just You just got to just a little pinch of that to kind of, extract just a little bit of that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just that's so that's been on my mind, and that's and and what happens is sometimes it's like the hot and cold, man, with the faucet too. It's like I sit there and think, well, I need more cold, I gotta slow down. And then I sit in practice and I'm playing and I'm struggling and I'm like, no, I this isn't working. So it's like I don't know where I'm gonna end up. I just so that doesn't matter. Like it matters. It matters. I'm gonna try exactly because I want to be able to put myself in a position where I can perform, more, consistently, as much as consistent as possible, and perform well. But the bottom line is volume. I have to just,
Yeah, so
I, just
hit this. Let me
practice.
hit this,
So.
because I'm not your coach exactly, but we coach each other. We're always in each other's corner, and that's why we talk, because we're friends, and we're also sounding boards. If I was your coach, what I would tell you is, I'm not saying you're absolutely wrong to think that. You're not wrong to question that. You're not wrong to think about that. But what I do think is that I think it's a little premature, because here's what I know. I know a couple things. I know that when you've tried to slow down your game and like in any way, that it not only does your performance dip, but your joy dips, and it becomes miserable and grindy and ineffective, and then it doesn't make you want to play. So I don't know, like right away when you say that, I'm like, well, it's not like it's new. It's not a new idea. But so the first thing I was like, yeah, you know, we want to go down this road again. But then the other thing that occurred to me, and it's funny because, you know, if anybody would feel the opposite, you'd think it would be me, like, because I play a slower style. Yeah, I'm like, Josh, if you just played like me, it would be like, no. I'm actually like saying the opposite. Like, no, I've made that mistake. I've wanted you to gain some benefits of, you know, a couple of little things here and there. And I think some of those things have helped, but it had to be like stripped down to like the barest, you know, the barest tweak possible, because you're not going to ever play Alex Pagulayan style pool. So anyway, so we've already been down that road. And as much as you think I'm a fan of ice is for ice men, not for firefighters. And so the other thing is that if you went out there and made that ball on Soucy and then caught a gear and ran a bunch of racks at the end and just somehow gingerbreaded your way across the finish line, got into the final 16 and ran over a couple champions and got to the finals, like, then you'd be like, well, at least I never have to worry about my style of play again, because obviously this works.
Yeah,
and so it's like, it's just kind of results. It's like results oriented. It's like the fact is that if I'd played a Rodas, I'd be like, oh, my style's no good. You know what I mean? But instead, I play a Matt Cron, I turn it a perfect set. I'm like,
Okay, exactly. You know that's what's so hard about this game, man. It's so hard. And there's this little sick part of me that I watch the way these guys that play, and they play really, really like solid, deliberate, and Soucy's not super deliberate. He just plays really solid,
He is. I mean, he's not like slow. I mean, he's not agonizingly slow, controlling, and like doubtful. He's confident and decisive, but he's also deliberate and you know, very very, very structured, you know, like mechanic. I mean, not mechanical in a bad way, but, you know, whatever words I'm looking for being like very measured, calm, deliberate. Yeah. Those are all words.
It doesn't look like I could ever do that, because I just, but then I
if you look
like
across the room and you see, you know, then you look across the room and you see James Aranis and Jesus Atencio and you know, just running around the table and running out from everywhere. And it's like, and Rodney Morris and Earl and Brandon Schaaf plays kind of like that a little bit. You know, he was playing pretty fast and loose against Jesse.
My thought was, if I only have like one shell, so I'm sorry, this is a rabbit hole. So I appreciate you talking about it. I just feel like we're talking, so I'll just hit it with you quick. My thought was, if I only have one shell and I have to play and not give anything up, wouldn't I want to build my game around that? Like, just like, if my career is I have to play in my garage and no one's gambling with me in Minnesota, basically, and it's just hard to find matches, and so I have to sit and basically play for a month and a half in my garage, and then I get to go to a pro tournament and play, try to win one set of nine ball at a time. Like, it doesn't seem like it sets it up for being a gear type of loose player. It seems like, wouldn't I just be better off building more of a grindy, vulture-y, like more a little bit deliberate game? Or what, am I missing something there, Dem? Or?
Well, I just think that in the end, the bottom line is the bottom line. If that actually worked, I mean, you could come up with a theory and say, based on my limited resources and based on my limited competition, when I have one shell, you know, it would solve one problem. It would solve exactly one problem, is that you would not go home and feel like, I should have been more careful on that shot.
That's why I feel, you know.
But it would not solve the problem where you get eliminated, miss a ball, and go home and say, I wish I'd given myself a chance on that shot and just put a trusting swing on there and, you know, shoot it the way I shoot in practice and shoot it the way I know I can shoot it. I wish I just trusted myself and shot it the way I shot. And instead I forced myself to say no, because if you missed, then you might regret the way you shot this. So now what you got to do is slow down and walk around the table and aim it with your cue stick and get down and take four practice strokes and then shoot. And now I missed it, but I didn't get careless. But now I'm always going to wonder, if I just shot the ball in the hole, would that have worked? You know what I mean? So it's like, God damn it. It's like,
I know.
There's
man.
Just no, I mean, in the end, so here's the takeaways for anybody listening. In the end, you even said it. Losses are inevitable. Losses are fine. They teach you stuff. And sometimes you have to not learn the wrong lessons. And I think that I've already said you got to collect losses. There's 19 losses for every win. And so you're going to lose, lose, lose. And you got to be okay with that. And part of it is not learning the wrong, because anytime you start thinking along the lines of what adjustment can, so if you're thinking about what adjustment can I make that will probably help me and perform better, that's one question. But if the question is, what adjustment can I make to where I don't lose again? Or what adjustment can I make so these losses don't hurt? That's the wrong question, because it's
Yeah.
like, no, you're going to lose again and they will hurt. And so
Yeah.
therefore, that's the way you can tell, is this a good lesson or the wrong lesson? Is am I
Yeah.
learning this because I really think this is the right direction for me to go? Or am I trying to do this because I just don't want to suffer anymore? And
I'm
it's like,
trying to
no.
suffer manage because I feel like it, well, if I become more of a control-y guy, that's then I can leave knowing that I left it all out there
And
versus.
as the most nitty, scared, controlling guy this side of the Mississippi, I will tell you that the fact that I got off that two ball twice before I chunked it into the end rail doesn't make me feel any better. I am bleeding. I would pay all the prize money to have that two ball back and just shoot it again. But honestly, I don't, but I say that, but I'm joking, because in the end, I don't care, because it's just, that's just happens and I don't really care.
And I think, I think what I felt like was how poorly I played in those two matches. I just felt like, I wish I could go back and just grind a little harder or something. You know, it's like maybe I need to build my game around being a grinder because it just didn't work. Like I was too loose and blah, blah, blah. And then I felt like I just have to be a, like, what happens is I feel like, well, then I'm just a draw peddler. Like I'm just trying to peddle a good draw so I can get in gear and make something special happen. And that just feels like, well, that's not good, you know,
Yeah,
but
you're
then,
it's like cheating if you play 100 tournaments and wait till you get all the champions knock each other out and you get to play somebody that's like, yeah. But
yeah.
the fact is that that's to, and I know you're kind of going this way, that's pool too. It's like,
Yeah.
what do you think that, like, I mean, there's players that get knocked out in every tournament, and there's players that don't have to play. I mean, the fact that Aranis won was partly because Alex was on the other half. He didn't have to play him until the finals. And had he played, Alex first round, it might have been a different story. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
it's just like,
Yep. I gotcha.
yeah. And I think
So,
we're on the same page. Go ahead.
yep.
Go ahead.
No, Demi. This is a great conversation.
So
So I
I think
appreciate
that's
it. I got.
I think it's really good, which is just like, your style's fine, and that you're, even the amount of pressure you feel, or the amount of tight or loose you feel, that changes set to set, shot to shot sometimes. And so I think that it's just a matter of, like, just mostly just more at bats for you. Not just not because you even like need to learn and get seasoning and more experience. I'm not saying that. I just mean, like, literally running the exact same
Just
game that you already have
statistics. Yeah,
and
just
just
that. Yeah.
giving it a few more chances. But then
Yep.
also, as you do that, I also know that it's just, you'll get back to the rhythm of tournament play again too, because it has been a
Yep.
while since we really played a lot of tournaments.
And then the other thing is it was motivating to like, so I closed out my business before I left. So there's a lot of stuff going on. My brother's taken over my business. And so there's just a lot happening. We had family stuff, personally stuff. I did not prepare like as much as I'd like to for the tournament. And so I can adjust a little bit of my preparation moving forward. And now I'm done working. So like tomorrow, for instance, I can practice and I don't have anything other than a couple family things I need to take over with the kids and stuff. But like, I'm ready to move forward and I'm ready to maximize my practice. I put together a schedule that was based on what I could actually do and what I knew I could accomplish, not what I thought I needed to do. Like I actually sat down for an hour and laid out, this is about what I can know that I can take and handle with practice, with my life and what my interest level is in practicing and all that stuff. So it was a good lesson for me this weekend too, because I don't need to blow everything up. I don't need to restart everything. I do think that if I just run it a bunch of times playing as good as I'm playing, then I'm going to have great things happen. But I also know that it's good to practice and it's good to be prepared. And I'm not like going off the deep end where I'm trying to play 10 hours a day, but I'm definitely going to be motivated to practice. So that's it, man.
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, losses and wins are both extremely motivating.
Yes.
And so that's it. And what I love, and he said something that I just want to zoom in on for the audience, which without going into it too deep, but when you decide where you want, what your goals are and what your practice or what you're going to do for input to get to that output, like you gotta figure out, you know, a lot of people, they pick a certain level of output that they want, and then they start figuring out what input they need to get. Well, some people don't even think about the input. They just pick their output and
yeah,
it
just
works.
Pick their output,
and then
yeah.
That doesn't work, and that's whatever. But then there's people that pick an output that they want, and then they look at the input that they need to put in, and they're like, well, I guess that's what I have to do. And then they start down that road, but then family and work and life, and just they, you know, maybe technically they have the hours of the day, they could theoretically do it, but they don't have the energy and the discipline, the focus or the desire. And it's just not, if it's like, if it was different, I could do it, but it's not different, so I can't. And so you got to work within the resources of energy and will and time and, yep, and actual like life will that you have to put into yeah. pool.
We and all so have a reality, and we got to live and work within our reality and be honest with ourselves.
So it's better to look at what input you could realistically put in, and then kind of think through like what output you think you could get with that, and then be aggressive. But, you know, challenge yourself a little, push a little bit on the input and push a little bit on the output. But you don't want to set it up to where you're like, come back from a tournament and you're like, all right, I'm setting up that shot I missed. I'm going to practice it 1,000 times a day, and I'm never going to miss it again. I'm never going to lose again. I'm going to come out and I'm going to be a James Aronis. It's like, the problem with that is it sounds great. And you know, this is some myth that makes me kind of, this actually kind of makes me sick to my stomach that people think this way. Because all that does, listen, if you go ahead and do that, friend, go ahead and do that, friend. You go ahead and practice that shot 1,000 times a day until you never miss and you beat everybody. Tell me when you beat everybody. Oh, what's that? You did that for about an hour on the first day and then you never did it again. And you're still at the same level you were when you lost at that last tournament, because you're like made an impossible plan that you didn't stick with. That's what happened, right? But yet you're still sticking to that plan next time. You still think that's the right approach, right? You're like, well, that would have worked. I just didn't do it. But that was the right move. And I'm here to tell you, no, the reason it didn't work is because it's the wrong move. If it was the right move, it would have worked. See, because it's actually results that matter, not like dreaming on paper and like talking a big game about what you'd do if you had more time. Like this is the type of practical advice I give to students. So like, if you come live with me for 3 days, I will help you. Like, this is what, like, I just can't have people. A lot of pool, man, they think of lessons. They're like, what am I going to learn? You're going to show me something. It's like, no, I'm going to make sure that you actually like figure out what you have for resources to put into your game, know how to set it up to where you get the most out of it, and then actually see results and improvement and hit goals. And it just drives me. I mean, the reason I do this is I'm so passionate about these things. I'm so confident that that's the way to do it. And I'm really proud of you for doing that. Saying, hey, what do I have? Not that I could put in, but that I can and will put in. Yeah. I didn't ask, can you beat him? I asked, will you? With any
exactly. And you know what my experience too, Demi, is? I put in a ton of volume. I put in a couple thousand games over the, you know, and I put the first 1,500 of those games was really, really back-to-back. It was a lot of games every day, ghost games. So I've done it. And now I'm like, I can't effing do that again. I can't do that. I can't play that much. Like, I don't – like, I did – for a while, but this is not
sustainable.
It's not sustainable. So I looked at it and I'm like, okay, so instead of saying I'm going to play 100 games a day until I blah, 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 blah. And it's like doing all that stuff you said, I just looked at it. And I'm like, what's my reality based on my experience, what I've done in the past and all these things. And I'm a disciplined MFer, man. I wake up every day and run, and you know how my schedule is working out and stuff. It's like, I'm super disciplined. But then I also understand that that cuts into my energy for practicing too. Like, I want to do this training, you know, so whatever, man, it's good, man. I'm excited. And it's based on reality is all I'm trying to say. I'm basing my plan on what's my experience. It's almost like a stock, like what's it done in the past and what I think it can logically do or whatever. And so I'm looking at myself and saying, what have I done in the past, knowing that I'm super disciplined, but there's only so much discipline I have in my tank right now. And so for the next, you know, month, for the next tournament, I'm going to do this. And then I maybe adjust after that, or maybe I'll do this for 6 months and I'll adjust next year. So it's just, I'm good, man. I'm in a good spot, and it's, you know, losing helps learn and think and grow. And thanks for talking to me about this, man, because you really helped straighten me out. And I knew I probably would have went out and picked lint and picked spots off of the table for an hour and then wanted to smash my cues and quit pool. So now I'm just going to go out there and be myself.
Yeah, perfect.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I'll tell you, I'm going to keep it short because we're winding down here. But I'll tell
yeah,
you,
yeah.
if there is, there's a few things physically, like, of course, shots that I want to work on or some things that, you know, some things that I want to play with, of course, for myself. But I think the funniest part and the biggest thing that I want to do is there's a certain situation that I found. I guess I just hadn't been in that spot for a while. And that is I was amazed at how discouraged I felt in situations that were, if somebody else was in that situation, it wouldn't be that perturbing. So for example, when I was down to Soucy, like I think I was up at one point, I might've been ahead of him. Like maybe I was ahead of him 3-2. And then he got me down like 5-3 where he ran like two tables and I made a mistake. And next thing you know, like he ran like two tables. Like here we are trading games. I'm up 3-2. So I'm like, okay. And then I go down 5-3 because he runs a couple tables and I miss a ball. And I felt like it was the end of the world. And I'm like, well, why do I'm down 5-3, but here's why. It's because in the beginning of it, as I'm thinking about this, I'm like, well, it's because my storyline was, well, so far we're trading games. I'm up 3-2. It's 3-3. Fine. And all of a sudden he breaks and runs a table. And then I dog a ball and he runs out. And next thing you know, it's like, well, wait a second. I thought we were trading games, but apparently now you're just running me over. And it's like I thought I was hanging with you. And now I see you're just blowing me off the table because you've just ran two or three tables and we're like, we're done trading. And now you're just going to take them all. And it's like, that's how it started to feel, was like, well, now I just can't win anymore because you're just going to run me over from here. And it's like, I was just really discouraged. And so that's where I felt like, and then, so that was the situation, was all of a sudden he catches a little gear and I dog a ball. And then how I felt was, oh, great. Instead of trading games, now I'm kind of like just losing from here. And he's a better player and he's playing really good. And now I'm falling behind and he's catching his stride. And man, it's like, I just watched my winning chances go real low, but it's like, it's here, it is 5-3 or 6-3 or something. And it's like maybe 5-3, 5-4, 6-4. And it's like, but then it's like, he makes a mistake and I don't. And next thing you know, it's 6-6. I'll tell you what, Josh, if you asked me how good I was playing when it was 6-6, I would have told you I was playing okay, but that I'd made some really hard to forgive blunders. Okay. Like I would have told you I was playing not my best, but I was playing okay, but I'd really made a couple blunders and I was not feeling very confident. And then, but yet the score was 6-6. And then at the same time, when it was 10-7, if you'd asked me how I was playing, for sure, I would have said, man, I'm shooting like straight up in the air this set. And then, but yet it went 10-10 and I played good at the end. But it's like, the funny part is like that set, it's just, I guess what I'm going to try to say is like, I just felt like I made, and it's hard to let go of mistakes. That's the other thing, is when you're down 6-4 and you've like, I mean, there was a four ball I missed, Josh, that was like, I can make that four ball. And then I missed the one ball too. And it was the most frustrating thing. Like I just lost a couple games and things were going his way and I wasn't feeling very confident. I'm feeling discouraged. I got to the table. He left me like, he finally like makes a mistake and leaves me like an open shot in the one. And I just felt like I couldn't run the balls out. I got down and missed the one. And it's like, I didn't even really give it a good chance. And I didn't really give it, I'm not saying I didn't give it my best effort, but like, I kind of went into that with like a gloomy kind of disposition and just wasn't like, hey, now I'm going to make the one ball run the table. It's like, oh man, I'm probably just, you know, I just didn't have a lot of fight in me at that moment. And so situation was, he wins a few racks in a row and starts playing good. Emotions were, I got really discouraged. And then the results were, I kind of turned in a lackluster performance, a couple racks, and made some pretty critical mistakes. And then, you know, in the end, it's like, oh, I dogged it on the hill. But at the same time, if I'd had a little bit more resilience in the middle of that set, maybe I'm up 10-7. You know what I mean? It's like, who knows? Yeah. And it's like, just because, and then the thing is that just because the guy runs three racks in a row doesn't mean that he's going to keep running three racks in a row. It's like, just because it's raining right now, this hour, doesn't mean that the sun won't come out in an hour. But if you sit there and quit, then you'll never know if the sun would have come out or not. You know what I mean? And it's like, so for me, what do I really learn about all this? Like, what are my takeaways? Well, physically, I get to see where I break down. So when I'm discouraged, I, you know, he doesn't get ball in hand because I feel bad. He has to, like, it has to come out in physical mistakes. So I got to see where I break down physically, and doesn't mean I can fix it, but at least means that I can practice it. But then at the same time, mentally, I just want to remember that, like, when it's raining, I understand it feels like I can't win and I can't play good and I should just, you know, whatever, I should quit pool forever and give up and just stick to 3-day boot camps and never even play another tournament. Like, it can feel pretty discouraging, especially the more input you put in, by the way, people, the more and more you work, the more discouraging it is when it's still not enough to play perfect all the time.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, it's definitely tough, but in the end, I mean, then the hell of it is, Josh, it's like, and I said this before, and I said this when I went to Derby with you last time, it's like, if I play as bad as I play and still made the final eight and became one rack away from the final four, like, you know, which technically, if I'd won that rack, I would have been in third, fourth, right? Yeah. So I would get to tell people I took third in that tournament. And it's like, if I play so bad, but then I still got, you know, to fifth and one rack away from third, well, then it's, I mean, it can't be that bad. You know what I mean? It can't be that
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like, it feels, I'm telling everybody, like, it feels, doesn't matter what you finish. Like, it feels terrible when you play bad and when you miss balls and when you lose. But it's like, in the end, I can't, it's like, no, I don't feel like I play, like, I don't feel like I play like super awesome. I'm the man because I just make mistakes. But in the end, I guess what I'm trying to say is I can see by some of the, I mean, but then again, I sometimes can see by the high water marks with the 9-0 set against Matt Craw and by the run out on the hill against the local guy I played, Scott Haas, I think his name was. And I can see by the way I closed out against, you know, Joey Korsiak.
Yeah.
And just, you know, getting it done and getting the job done. And, you know, it's like, I could see that it's like, well, as bad as I played bad at times during a couple of sets that got close, but I closed it out at the end. I played really good on Matt. And I played a really good comeback on Sosie, and frankly, just getting to 6-6 against the guy. The fact, if I can, basically what I'm saying is, if I can take the guy to Hill Hill with my B game, then it's like, I'll keep practicing to get stronger, and then I'll keep trying. And I know that when I do hit that if I can have good results with my B game, then I'm going to have some good results when my A game comes, and I can do things to strengthen my game so that my B game is better and my A game is better. But that in the end, a big part of it is just knowing that just because my B game is patchy at times, like, I just have to be ready for, you know, I was just surprised at how discouraged I got for very minimal amounts of, like, things going badly. And so I just want to be really ready to, like, have people put racks on, maybe behind on the score, and really having made just a few blunders to where I know that I could have been up 6-4 and now I'm down 6-4 because I just sold out two shots because I was feeling discouraged. So I decided to just miss. And, like, I got to be able to, like, shake that off and say, okay, I can't change how I feel, but I'm really going to be process minded and make sure that, like, I give my absolute best fight on every shot, because I don't mind losing because I make mistakes, and I don't mind losing because the guy plays good. And I just don't like losing because I it's like I had an owie. I felt bad. And so I pouted, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to lose. Like, I can lose because of him playing good, and I can even lose because of me playing bad. But I can't handle losing because my feelings were hurt. You know what I mean? Like, no, yeah. That's not, that to me, that's not okay. It's like, that's process based. Like, when I'm feeling bad, I still have to put my fight in there. And I wasn't happy with the fight I had when I wasn't feeling good. So not much more to say, but does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think she'll let me talk that through. Cause I had that. I knew I got discouraged too easy. And I knew that it came out in bad play, but I didn't really boil it down to what I was going to do about it. But now I think I'm looking forward to the next tournament I play. I'm like, I'm looking forward to having things go to where I start feeling discouraged, because I'm going to go into that tournament, like, I'm waiting to feel discouraged. And I'm going to be like, I am going to get better by elevating my bad game. And the way I'm going to do that is waiting until I'm discouraged, I'm playing badly. And then if I can just fight 10% harder or 20% harder when I'm feeling bad, then, like, man, that could be devastating, because if I'd fought a little harder when I was playing bad, maybe instead of missing three of those shots, I only missed two of them. And then that might've been enough. And then next thing you know, you're in the final four, and then you catch a gear against Alex and you make the finals. And then all of a sudden you're playing your own horse that you have in the Calcutta, and everything's funny. Roddy Wiseman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So of course it might take me a couple of James Aranis draws before I get another swing at the bat like that. But I can I'll rail next time around. I'll play Aranis and I'll watch you from the rail as you run it. So awesome, man. Well, let's see. Anything else? Let's see. I mean, it's been a good podcast. I think it's close to winding down. I think if you and I were talking off air, I think that's pretty much what we have said. This is about the time where we say, yeah, that kind of covers it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, and we're not going to do a road story because we've kind of just done that for
We did
2 hours.
the whole road story there,
Yeah, pretty much. So, the let's see, anything else? I think we're good, man. I think we're good. So this is here's the only other thing I'm going to say. If you like these episodes with me and Josh talking pool, I appreciate the feedback a few of you guys have given because I find these difficult. You know, I mean, this is not natural for me to like. I'm very introverted, and I pretty much live in a world with just a few people I'm very close with, and this is unusual. It's unusual for me to just basically share my journal with the world, and so, and it's weird. I'll just say I normally. This is not something I normally would do. The reason I'm doing this is because I believe deeply in the profound impact I'm able to make with people that come train with me. I've met some really, really, really awesome people, and I've really been excited and I'm passionate about pool. There's very little I love more than working with people and helping them break through to the next level on their pool game. And that for me to be able to do that, people need to come here and train, and they don't hear about me unless I tell them. So I'm not big on soliciting, and I'm not big on opening myself up to the world, but I am big on training, and this is kind of what I need to do is tell that story to get that story out there so I can keep doing what I love to do. And so yes, come train with me, but also because of that, this is a little strange for me because if I didn't have a business to promote. Now I'm mixed about it because now I know that some people enjoy listening to us and stuff too, but I'm not sure I'd really open myself up this way. And some people have some snide things to say, and there's a lot of, you know, I don't care. I mean, I just that's usually just why I keep to myself. But all I'm saying is it means a lot to me when people reach out and drop me an email or send a comment on Facebook when we post our podcast. And it does mean a lot because that's it. So thank you for any feedback and any positive feedback and any kind critical feedback like we gave to Chris, as long as it's coming from a place of partnership and love, and then I'm all good. So
There's an emotional price you pay for your art, Demi. We understand.
oh my gosh. You know who that reminds me of, and I won't say that, but yes.
That's
Okay.
awesome.
You're the man,
So.
Josh. Okay, I'll ring off. So everyone, we're going to be trying to do these about once a month. We've got a lot of tournaments coming up. So
Oh, yeah.
Josh and Demetrius tournament season reviews. You get the front row seat on live
Yeah.
review.
Hey, shout out to your guys from Virginia too that drove up 5 hours to or a few hours to watch you play and
Yeah,
meet you
yeah.
and
So
stuff. Yeah.
Joe came up,
Brought a
and
few
then
buddies with
he
him.
brought his buddies Eric and Guy. And they actually drove like an hour and a half to come watch me play a little bit. And I'm going to be communicating. I think one or both of them might be doing some training with me, you know,
Yeah.
soon. And that's going to be fun too. So it was good to see them. And I just feel bad because when people come to see me at a tournament, I'm just so zoned on what I'm doing that it's like I don't want to seem like I'm some aloof player that's like too good for the common civilians or something like. Not at all. It's just that like. I'm fighting for my life and I'm super focused on like all I'm really thinking about is like what needs to happen for me to like not get eliminated and miss every ball in 10 minutes. And so I'm just very focused on what's coming up. So sorry if I was not more cordial or if I seemed distracted, it's not because I'm disinterested as you guys as people. It's just like just doing my best. I was doing my best. But it was really cool to see him. And it's I know I'll be back. So okay, I'm gonna wrap it. I'm gonna call it
All right, bro.
I'll
That's
talk
it.
to I'll talk to I'll drop this thing soon, and then we'll do another pod soon. So
Yeah, sounds good, Dan. Good times.